You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello and welcome to the On The Money podcast. It's Monday, the 21st of July. I'm Stephanie Youssef, filling in for Ricardo Gonçalves. Today, the ASX shed 89 points, closing 1.02% lower, its worst one-day decline since April. A little more on that later, but first, a new joint report by the Australian Human Rights Commission and the Australian Human Resources Institute has found a quarter of HR professionals surveyed now classify workers aged 51 to 55 as older. That's up 10% from their 2023 report. I spoke with the Age Discrimination Commissioner at the Australian Human Rights Commission, Robert Fitzgerald.
Look, this report is really important. Because on the upside, it says that many employers in Australia are starting to move away from using age as a way of determining recruitment and other practices. And that's a very good thing. Age-inclusive practices are really important in our workplaces. On the other hand, there is a small but significant group that are still using age as a determiner for recruiting people, for allowing practices that often sometimes are harassment of older people, and really also about the very poor practices we have in helping people to retire. And those sorts of findings are a wake-up call because Australia needs to employ more older people. Not only is it good for older people, but the economy and our productivity as a nation depends on us increasing the participation rate of older workers in the workplace. So these are important issues for firms, for individuals, but for the nation.
It found that more HR professionals are finding that 51 or over is being classified as an older worker. What's driving this? Like, have you seen an increasing trend in recent years?
Well, the most disturbing finding in this report is that a quarter of employers do see old age as being 51 plus. And that's an alarming change in what we've seen in previous years. So if this is a trend, then there are significant consequences if it leads to prejudices and biases and decisions that are based on age. What we should have seen by now is a change where younger HR professionals actually see older age as being later in life, not earlier. But this gives us something to work on. It says we can't take for granted that just because Australia is an aging society, there are more older people who wish to and need to work, that in fact our employers and HR managers and so on are attuned to those changes. But it is an unusual result and one that needs to be analysed if we're not going to go down a very prejudicial route for older people.
How important is age diversity in recruitment and what are the benefits of retaining older workers?
Well, one of the great tragedies at the moment is there are some inbuilt prejudices against the employment of young workers and also older workers. We see artificial intelligence being used to examine CVs and biographies well before any human looks at it. And we know they've got inbuilt prejudices into them. We know that many of the workplace practices are not age-friendly. So the great benefits of having an age-inclusive or an age-diverse workforce is you harness the talents of young people, their creativity, their technical knowledge, their willingness to be innovative, together with the experience and expertise of older workers. And that coming together is a powerful dynamic of good for the actual firm. It increases the productivity within the firm. It's extremely good for all workers, including older workers. And of course, it's very good for our national economic and social well-being. So the benefits of having an age-inclusive environment are multi-layered, individual, workplace, and also national.
What are some of the obstacles that HR professionals say they face in recruiting older and even younger workers?
Well, some of the surveys showed that some of the concerns by HR professionals in terms of barriers to employment of older people were that, in fact, older people are not applying, and that's a bit of a self-selecting out. They don't think they're going to be accepted. Their experience says they're not going to be accepted, so they don't apply. A second is, they say, expectations of salaries for older people. And of course, the third one and most concerning is actually that older people are too experienced. So the very things that make you valuable becomes a barrier. In relation to younger people, it's the perverse. It's a conception or a perception really that younger people are not loyal, they're not as hardworking, they're not as motivated. And that's simply not true. What we see in that space is a whole lot of very dynamic, innovative and creative young people. So we've got two groups that are being excluded because of barriers, and we say those barriers have to come down, and that starts with the attitude of the employer and the attitude of human resource professionals who are largely responsible for recruitment practices and workplace practices.
What are some ways that businesses can encourage people to stay longer in the workforce, be that measures or policies that they can put in place?
Well, firstly, it's a desire to keep older workers in the workplace. As we've already indicated in the report, more older workers want to stay in employment for longer, and some need to because of financial circumstances. So there's two or three things that have got to happen. The first is there's got to be a culture within the workplace that values the gifts and talents of all workers, young and old, and that they come together to share those views and those expressions of experience and creativity and innovation. The second is we've got to have policies that make sure that bullying and harassment of older people, sometimes to encourage them to retire early, are stamped out. The third is we actually need to make adjustments. As you get older, it doesn't mean you're going to be in the same role or even the same pay or even work the same number of hours. So we have to have adjustment policies for older workers. And most importantly, we have to have dignified retirement strategies. At the end of the day, we are all going to, leave our jobs and the workforce generally. At the moment, the first thing that happens is you're fired. You're replaced by a young worker. That's unnecessary. And we need much better pre-retirement strategies, which will benefit the firm and, of course, the individual worker.
What are some issues? You have touched on this a bit in terms of productivity, but what issues can ageism create for businesses or even more broadly the economy?
If we don't deal with ageism, and ageism is really where we perceive older people to be less than they are, less than they're what they're capable of, then in fact we will not address the productivity issues that the Commonwealth Government and others are now talking about. We will not improve the labour force shortages that we have. And frankly, we will not enhance the well-being of older people as they approach old age. So ageism is a negative or a barrier to doing to positive ageing. And positive and productive aging is what we need to see. That will absolutely benefit the firm. It will benefit all employees within the firm, but it will actually benefit Australia as a nation. So this agenda has been talked about for a while, but now there's an economic and social imperative to adjust it. If we can reduce ageism, if we can actually have positive and productive aging going forward, this is of national benefit and needs to be embraced as part of the productivity reform agenda currently being considered.
That was Age Discrimination Commissioner Robert Fitzgerald. Now to the Australian share market, which has suffered its worst one-day decline since Donald Trump announced his so-called Liberation Day tariffs in April. The ASX 200 closed 1.02% lower at 8,668 points, a stark contrast from Friday's record close. For more, I spoke with Blueberry Markets analyst Zoran Krešević, who says this was expected. So Zoran, Friday was the best day in 15 weeks for the share market. It seems to have walked back a lot of those gains today. Why is that? What's driving the market today?
You're 100% correct, Stephanie. It's a market today with 1.2% decline. Nine out of 11 sectors have actually come off, and predominantly driven by the financial sector, in particular the four banks, which obviously make up the biggest market share in terms of ASX 200. And top four banks combined were on average 2% down each. It's natural to actually see this occur after, ASX has actually broken through and reached an all-time high. We could expect, and it is expected, to actually see some sell-off. Now, the good thing is that, whilst it has actually come off 1.2% for the day or 100 points, it is actually about to retest that major support level now. And there was actually a major resistance level over the past couple of months at 8,600. And as long as the ASX 200 can actually hold at these levels and gain some momentum and ground, then hopefully over the coming days and weeks, we can see actually, see that retest of all-time high and ASX continue to head higher.
Looking ahead, it's a busy week this week. We have the RBA meeting, the RBA minutes being released tomorrow. The Fed chair in the US is going to deliver a speech midweek, and investors are waiting for the ECB decision later this week. What can we expect from the markets? Could we see a bit of like seesaw action?
It's a quite broad question and one that's on everyone's horizon, or it has been at least over the past couple of weeks. So I'll start off with ECB, European Central Bank. I believe that ECB will actually continue to hold the rates as they are right now in the July meeting, but not only in July, likely to actually to do so in the month of September as well. Predominantly driven by the fact that, in terms of the interest rates or in terms of the inflationary data, it is in line with the central bank expectation around 2%. Now, there is elements of the economy that are actually slowing down, on the back of that, they are likely to actually keep the rate neutral right now. Now, one concern that is right now is that obviously tariffs are starting to take an effect, and it could be reflationary in Europe. And on the back of that, we will be watching that very closely over the coming weeks and coming months, just to ensure the inflation does not come back, and ECB does not have to actually intervene. So we are actually of the view here at Blueberry that the rates will actually stay as they are. If focusing on Fed, we are seeing quite a bit of concern at the moment with last week's news announcement that whilst it hasn't eventuated, that Donald Trump has been actually considering of removing Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Now, that's actually had a bit of concern in the market. And on the back of that, we are actually watching with all eyes and focusing on the Fed minutes that are due to come through this week. US dollar has been actually gaining some strength over the past few sessions on the basis that interest rate cuts might be prolonged. However, the mandate from Donald Trump is actually to continue cutting the rates, stimulate the economy, on the back of that, we will be watching those announcements quite closely. Now, closer to home in terms of the RBA, interesting time ahead. We haven't received the interest rate cut in the month of July, which was priced into the market by majority of economists and majority of banks. And on the back of that, we will be watching those minutes quite closely and see what RBA Chair Michelle Bullock actually has to deliver. Given the fact that unemployment data has actually ticked off, we've seen the news last week for the month of June, the unemployment rate has actually gone up to 4.3% in terms of higher than anticipated and higher what the consensus is at 4.1%. And we do have a quarter two CPI data coming out on the 30th of July, which is next Wednesday, which is probably going to be the marquee event ahead of that next August interest rate decision or RBA meeting. So if we do combine all this and we do get interest rate or inflation, trimmed mean inflation lower than what market was anticipated and in line with the expectation of within 2 to 3% band, then it's quite likely that we will get 25 basis point interest rate cut coming through in the month of August. On the back of that, we are likely to see ASX 200 gain some momentum, and hopefully we can actually continue that bullish rally in equities.
Reporting season is also right around the corner, and this week we're seeing a number of companies posting their quarterly updates. AMP has led the charge today. What do you make of those figures?
Well, MP has had a stunner run today, or not only in particular today on the back of their results, which were actually quite astonishing, given the fact that for the first time since 2017, the net asset inflows have actually gone up to approximately 33 million. This was on the back of the new product launch, Lifelong Super, which they've actually rolled out a few months ago. But not only that, on the back of strong wealth management section in particularly in New Zealand as well. So there was around 40 million in total. So combined these two effective results, we've actually seen AMP climb and close approximately 8.8% on the upside. And if we go a little bit backwards and have a look at the results since 23rd of June, we can see the AMP has actually to somewhat outperformed majority of stocks on ASX with a gain of approximately 40%. Going back in April, when the tariffs were announced by the US, from those lows, we've actually seen AMP outperform and gain momentum and gains around 61%, which is quite astonishing. So basically, on fundamental and on technical aspect as well, we're likely to see AMP continued strong run. And we believe it could be one of those stocks to actually watch within the horizon for some short and medium-term momentum.
And finally, Zoran, what are you telling your clients, and where are the opportunities for investors?
That's a great question, Stephanie. So we are seeing a bit of a rotational play from industrial sector into the material, in commodity sector in particular. I believe the China stimulus, we believe the tariffs and interest rate cuts that are potentially to come through and continue coming over the rest of the year will actually gain and create some amazing opportunities in the market. In particular, we are looking for those cyclical sectors. So we are looking at materials and the likes of BHP or Rio Tinto, as some of these stocks have actually underperformed the overall market. Contrary to that, if there is a geopolitical risk and economic risk coming globally, or reinflationary risk, as we would like to call it, then there could be some great opportunities to hedge your exposures with gaining and grounds in gold and potentially silver as well. So from start of the year, gold has actually gained approximately 33.5% gains, which is actually quite substantial and quite aggressive. On the back of that as well, silver has been actually outperforming the market. And whilst in nominal terms, it is cheaper than gold, it also had a cracking 34 to 35% since January the 1st, 2025. This is likely to continue over the coming months. We would like to actually probably ride those trends and continue actually adding into the portfolio to make sure that we mitigate the risk or any potential risk or geopolitical tensions that could actually continue our way.
That was Zoran Krezovich from Blueberry Markets.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.